Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. If you were asked, who is the man known as the greatest incendiary in all of America and one of the earliest activists in the American Revolution? Chances are you may not have the right answer. He is Dr. Joseph Warren, who led the groundwork for American independence at a time when many colonists were opposed to armed rebellion. Our next guest, historian Christian Despina, has gone through a variety of documents to bring Dr. Warren's story to light. It's outlined in the new book titled Founding Martyr, The Life and Death of Dr. Joseph Warren, the American Revolution's Lost Hero. Christian Despina, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you so much for having me.
So while many people may not know who Dr. Joseph Warren is, why should we put him with the likes of George Washington and Thomas Jefferson?
Well, in my humble estimation, before there was George Washington, there was Dr. Joseph Warren. So when Joseph Warren is killed at the Battle of Bunker Hill on June 17, 1775, Washington has just been appointed general of the Continental Army about 3 days before. Now, at that point, Washington had been a retired colonel of the Virginia Regiment. So it's been almost 20 years since he's been involved in a military conflict. So when he arrives in Cambridge, he has to fill Dr. Joseph Warren's shoes. There's primary source letters from soldiers involved in the Battle of Bunker Hill that are writing, a new general arrived today, not mentioning Washington by name. And the few letters that do mention Washington by name say, who is this General Washington? We have never heard of him before. Mm-hmm. And just to put it in perspective, John Adams had written a letter basically saying, I had never heard the name George Washington before. Who is this man? Huh. So really, this is Washington will become Washington, but at this point, he's not well known. He's known in Virginia. He's not really known in the rest of the colonies. He really has to step in and fill that role that Dr. Joseph Warren has left behind.
Hmm. So Warren, who is he? He's born in Roxbury in 1741.
Right.
And how did he become such a revolutionary?
Well, this is an amazing part of the story because by all rights, when you read the documents and the letters, by all rights, he should have cast his lot with the Loyalists. He's getting a lot of political patronage from the Loyalists and the Tories, but he does cast his lot with the Patriot Whigs. And really, the people who do recognize the name, oh yeah, Dr. Joseph Warren, he was killed at the Battle of Bunker Hill. But it overshadows the 10 years of resistance activities against these oppressive crown policies by the British. And people don't know really what he was involved with for those 10 years, from the Stamp Act riots to the Townsend duties to the Boston Massacre, the Tea Party, the battles of Lexington and Concord, the skirmishes at Noddle's Island, Grapes Island, and Bunker's Hill. All that basically gets washed away from this one afternoon.
Hmm. Tell me what it was about his story that motivated you to want to dig deeper.
I first came across a book, and it was written in 1835, and it was written actually by his niece. And I started reading it thinking, wow, so this fellow delivers two Boston Massacre orations. He's performing autopsies. He's part of a three-man committee writing the short narrative of the horrid massacre at Boston. He's writing these incendiary polemical articles in the newspaper. He's fighting in these battles. He's president of the Provincial Congress, head of the Committee of Safety. He's involved in the Boston Tea Party, helping to plan it. He becomes a Grand Master of the Scottish Rite Masons in North America.
And all this stuff, and you never heard
right,
of him.
Right. We don't know who he is.
Right.
And he's really a footnote in history, and it's a shame.
Yeah. So tell us, you know, tell us a little bit more. You listed some of those accomplishments. And one of the things that you said that it was a story that's in the book that I thought was interesting is that in 1775, he volunteered to give the annual speech commemorating the Boston Massacre. And even though British soldiers threatened to assassinate him, he did, but he did so in a colorful way.
Right. And
what did he do?
So British soldiers are threatening to assassinate anyone who delivers that oration. And he volunteers to do it when no one else does. And not only does he deliver the oration, but he arrives and wears a toga while he's delivering the oration. And, you know, it's easy to look at this event with 21st century eyes and say, okay, he came through it unscathed, but he really didn't know. And part of the amazing thing is before he delivers this oration, he sees five patients that day. So it almost seems like he's unnerved by all this, but he arrives, he delivers the oration, And
in a toga.
In a toga. And really, after that, one British officer refers to Dr. Warren as the greatest incendiary of all America, as you stated at the beginning. Mm. But even high-powered loyalists like Thomas Hutchinson and Peter Oliver. Peter Oliver says about Dr. Joseph Warren, had he lived, the name Washington would have been in obscurity.
Wow.
Thomas Hutchinson says if Warren had survived, he would have been the Cromwell of North America. And these are high-powered loyalist, powerful, socially connected families saying this about Dr. Joseph Warren.
Describe what Boston was like, because when you're talking about this, you know, what's happening here, it sounds like there was a lot of chaos, and it was maybe a really tense time. Like, what kind of a picture would you paint for people, briefly, about what Boston was like when Dr. Warren was around?
British troops are constantly arriving in Boston, and at one point, there's as many British soldiers in Boston, occupying Boston, as there are adult white males. But Boston was just as nasty and dirty as you might expect it would have been back then. I mean, we see from some of the primary source journals that Warren's buying things like penis syringes to treat sexual diseases. There's a lot of prostitution. It was a very, very tense situation to have what was supposed to be our allies, our mother countries, our brothers, these British soldiers stationed in the colony. So it almost became like a standing army that was our enemy. This is what it started to be viewed as. And this is what started a lot of street fights, tarring and feathering. This is what led to the Boston Massacre. And that's when it really started to come to a head and become a powder keg.
Describe for me the role of the Masons and why that was important.
This was important because the Masons were a fraternal, charitable organization. And when Warren leaves Harvard, he goes back to the Roxbury Farm, and he's kind of removed from, I don't want to say civilization, but he's sort of on the outskirts of things. But then he joins the Masonic organization, St. Andrew's Lodge. Paul Revere was a member. John Hancock was a member of St. Andrew's. So this put Warren in touch with future patriots from the Whig organizations. You could start to see at this point Warren is really branching out and making social connections and networks that will be pivotal.
Speaking of two things from that, spy network.
Mm-hmm.
You have evidence that you sort of had the spy network going on at the
yes.
time as well. So describe that.
So we have a quote from Revere talking about how himself and 30 other mechanics organized themselves to spy on British troop movements and report their actions to one or two people, including Dr. Joseph Warren. But in the spring of 1775, most of these Whig patriots are on their way to the Continental Congress in Philadelphia. So Warren really becomes the on-the-ground leader of the revolution. Undoubtedly, Dr. Joseph Warren is at the head of an intricate system where this spy information is being filtered to him, and he's acting on it. Hmm. And this would lead to the Paul Revere's ride.
Right. So Paul Revere's midnight ride, really? Should it be called Warren's midnight
yes,
ride?
Yes, it should be called Dr. Joseph Warren's ride. And I hope Revere fans aren't going to be angry with me, but it's Dr. Joseph Warren's intelligence network that leads him to dispatch Revere and Dawes on the midnight ride. And even more incredibly, that next morning, Warren rides out into battle and is fighting in the hottest part of the battle in Arlington, and almost gets killed when his hairpin is shot out from the side of his head. Mm. It's just ironic that it's Warren's intelligence. Warren rides into the battle, fights in the battle. Revere rides out, gets caught by a British sentry, but we call it Paul Revere's ride. It really should be Dr. Joseph Warren's ride.
Mm. And then came the Battle of Bunker Hill.
Right.
Yeah. What happened?
So the way I'd like to say it would almost be as if the president would get in a tank and start fighting maybe in Iraq or Afghanistan. It was so incredulous that Dr. Joseph Warren would volunteer and fight in this battle. He's nominated a major general 3 days before, a major general of the provincial army. And he arrives at the battle on the morning of June 17th and asks, where is going to be the worst part of the fighting, because that's where I want to be. Now, the British make three attempts to get over the redoubt where the Patriots are, and in the third assault, they're successful. They climb the walls of the redoubt, and Warren is killed as he's trying to direct his men to the only escape route. He's shot through the face. And people don't hear about this for days. It's rumors. We don't know if Warren's killed. Was he captured? Was he even at the battle? One of the British generals say if his death is true, it's worth 500 of my most skilled soldiers. Okay. There's primary source letters from both British and American sides of the battle documenting that when the British did come over the redoubt, that they executed any wounded provincial soldiers. They bayoneted them with their bayonets, and they beat their heads in with the breeches of their guns. So there is no question that Dr. Warren's body was mutilated.
Hmm. So how do you think his death first affected the revolution?
So this is a time in the 18th century where there's no superheroes or actors. The heroes of that day were either nobility or their military heroes. So when Warren is killed, he really becomes the first American martyr. And the colonists look to him as a hero. And you see all these elegies and poems being published after he dies, referring to him as the godlike Warren. But again, it's sort of a catch-22 because his martyrdom overshadows his importance and his on-the-ground grassroots political activism that drove the colonies to independence.
Why do you think we've forgotten this history?
I think, you know, I'll put it in perspective. Warren's killed when he's 34. He dies a year before the Declaration of Independence is declared. He basically dies as a treasonous subject of King George III. He's not part of this later triumphalist phase of the American Revolution. My whole point of this book was to try and put some flesh on this marble statue of Joseph Warren.
Are there areas today in Boston where we can see his influence?
I think you can look at the Bunker Hill Monument, the obelisk. There's a Bunker Hill Monument Museum across the street. You can see his painting in Museum of Fine Arts, Boston. But I think his influence is all around the country because I don't think it's a bold claim to say that really without him, the Whig movement in Boston might have faltered and possibly ended in failure, because at this time, Boston is a microcosm of the colonies, and the events that are happening in Boston are so pivotal, and he's involved in every single event that really without him, I don't know exactly how things would have played out. I mean, it's nice to guess and kind of look back, but he was so pivotal.
So right now, at the end of 2018, is there a lesson or two that you think can be learned from Dr. Warren?
Yes, I think just his grassroots political activism and that dedication to what he believed in and the ideals of liberty and virtue and freedom, he really was more than just words. So not only does he deliver these orations, but he's writing these articles, he's fighting on the battlefield, and he really is an inspirational figure because he actually said what he meant, and he did what he said he was going to do.
Yeah.
And he didn't just...
There's a lesson.
Right, and he didn't just sit behind a desk and let other people do it for him. He actually did it with action.
Right. Okay, well, historian Christian Despina's new book is titled Founding Martyr, The Life and Death of Dr. Joseph Warren, The American Revolution's Lost Hero. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And that's our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Deborah Becker. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.